Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. We're also simulcasting on WPFW in Washington, D.C., WBAI in New York, and other stations. If you want to watch today's program, it's easy enough. You simply go to Ustream channel and just search for Gary Null. If you can't hear the show and you are by a land-based, let's say a radio or an internet, you can go to iTunes. There's all kinds of ways to be able to tune in. Also, for the hundreds of thousands of people who've used nearly 2 million minutes listening over the telephone, you always can call up this number anywhere and listen in. 619-550-0869, 619-550-0869. Today, the superfood raspberries, new information of why we should be enjoying this on a more regular basis. Some good information I just read from William Gomsky. Then the fructose poisoning epidemic in America. I believe that fructose is responsible for millions of Americans suffering from non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is a killer. So I'm going to talk about that. Then I mentioned yesterday one of the old foods that have been used in the United States. Probably every farmer had it at one time. I knew all the farms where I grew up, they had it. Bee pollen. 0.01 of a millimeter particle is a complete superfood. Christina Sirich from Natural Society tells us why. My guest in the second part of our program is Hunter Lewis. He is co-founder of Cambridge Associates. He is an author on economics, capitalism, environmental and medical issues, and moral philosophy. He is the president of the Alliance for Natural Health, and he is also the former chairman of the National Environmental Trust and the World Watch Institute. In the past, he was president of the American School for Classical Studies in Athens, Greece. He is the author of Crony Capitalism in America, as well as Free Prices Now. I'm going to talk with him about why we do not have capitalism in the United States today. We have some altered form of it, where it is a form of socialism for the rich and powerful in corporate America, where we pick up their losses and they do not share in their gains. So I'll discuss that. Also, a commentary today on, please tell me, Mr. President, why a U.S. drone assassinated my mother, from The Guardian, a man named Rafik Rehman. He had a 67-year-old grandmother and midwife, yet President Obama tells us drones target terrorists. Now, I'm doing this because on Sunday evening, 60 Minutes did one of the worst pieces of journalism I've ever seen in my entire life. They had an opportunity to question one of the most powerful men and one of the architects behind our assassination teams, our terrorist activities, the drones, because this man was second in command or third in command at the CIA and high up in the national security establishment. So he attacked and pillared Snowden, and this man did not come to his defense, or at least the defense of what Snowden had revealed. It was what the corporate media is about. And these people never get on these kind of programs unless they know they're going to use it to their advantage. So I'm going to respond to that. Also in Los Angeles, they're trying to set up the largest GMO-free zone in the United States and how we can help them there. Let's begin. Well, there was a time in the United States. Many of you probably were at the end of it, where you were born, let's say, in the 1940s or 50s, where your parents or grandparents had used natural medicines, what were called drugless therapies. Now, according to Natural News, before 1940, more than 85% of the U.S. population used drugless healers. According to this important article, which we'll post today, the news blackout and disinformation campaign of natural cures has been so effective since World War II that most people don't even learn of these therapies until the fateful moment when one of their loved ones are diagnosed with some dreadful disease. Then and only then will they begin this fighting for their life and delving into the plethora of alternative medicine, throw to the wayside all the supposedly scientifically supported mainstream medicine they fear so much. That was the case of the gentleman you heard yesterday on the program. For those of you who did not hear yesterday's program, a physician brought his mother, who is suffering from advanced dementia, to a one-month retreat. All the people who were there for the 1 month were there because they had medically irreversible conditions. Not all terminal, but irreversible. There's nothing in the arsenal of orthodox or scientific-based medicine that could help them. And yet they'd all tried. He had been through the orthodox medical model, which he is one member of, for over 6 years. And it was only when nothing was working, when all hope was given up, that he did his research and discovered my name, and then brought his mother. And there was a moment on a Tuesday during the month, in the evening, when his mother began to talk for the first time in a lucid manner, how she appreciated the people who were there, the hospitality, the quality of the food, the exercise. Now, if you have someone who has advanced dementia, they can't put those sentences together. And as he said, it flabbergasted him and everyone else. And not only that, but how his mother was searching for words. That meant that her brain was rebuilding and that she was taking one step closer each day to finding a way to express herself. So he was very optimistic when he left that he would once again see his mother as he had seen her his whole life. Well, it wasn't always the way that you only had an orthodox model. Just 100 years ago, what we call alternative medicine was the mainstream, consisting mainly of herbs, tinctures, roots, and medicinal mushrooms, which indigenous societies had proven effective for thousands of years. Doctors making house calls and traveling snake oil salesmen were also called quacks because they were not quacks at all. Conversely, they were nipping diseases and disorders, what little existed, in the bud, using nature's powerful extracts and herbal tinctures based upon a long history of proven methods. Just imagine the long history of natural medicine in China, in India, in Brazil, in Africa, in Australia, and right back here in the local roots of the Native Americans. By the way, the Native Americans knew that if they ate the adrenals of rabbits in the wintertime, it would keep them from developing what would later be called scurvy, lack of vitamin C. The best physicians in the Royal Navy didn't know that until a man named Lynn discovered that and found that lemons and limes contained something that would later be determined as being ascorbic acid, which would prevent that, which killed thousands and thousands of people who were deprived of vitamin C. But they also knew that in the woods, all you had to do is take the nettles of pine trees and boil them, and that also provided a nourishment that would give you vitamin C. So we have a long history of using natural ways of helping. It didn't mean that you didn't have some people exploiting it. Of course you did. But by and large, this kept people alive when otherwise they would have died. Think of all the times during the Civil War and the American Revolutionary War where a gunshot wound would almost certainly have caused infection and then gangrene and then death. But those who had been raised on farms knew that if you packed the wound with bee propolis and honey, raw honey, and changed it daily, you had a chance of saving the person. Well, we now know that bee propolis is one of the strongest natural antibiotics ever. Just 100 years ago, medicine was not a lucrative business. As you didn't have a lot of heart disease, cancer, diabetes was rare, arthritis, Alzheimer's was rare, and there was no pharmaceutically induced deaths. But between 1905 and 1912, deficiency disease was discovered, which meant scientists figured out that nearly all sicknesses and disease were caused by nutrient deficiency, and the recent discoveries of vitamin B12 and vitamin A and vitamin D proved it. Since then, farmers have fed cattle vitamins and trace minerals to prevent and cure disease, but the FDA doesn't want you to know any of this. Vitamin D, B12 is needed for healthy red blood cells and healthy nerve cells and to make DNA. Vitamin A is important for the immune system, helping cell membranes resist cancer and many other diseases. And the public lack of this understanding has been pivotal to the mass failure of informed choices regarding the prevention and cure of disease. Also, by 1935, vitamin C, ascorbic acid, became the first pure vitamin made available to the public through large-scale production. Now, because of the mass miseducation of vitamins and medicine in the United States, one must unlearn, deprogram themselves, and then relearn how medicine became so convoluted and corrupt. And the best example starts with a simple term for a drugless healer, which was twisted and published from the mainstream opinion to start everyone off on the wrong path. On a 70-year farce, which continues today, the term traveling snake oil salesman may bring to mind notions of a charlatan or a huckster, one who peddles worthless quack remedies that make all kinds of false health claims. But this belief or bad rumor came from the American Medical Association, which was led by a man named Morris Fishbein for 40 years. And I've done an in-depth investigation of this man. This man is a pure psychopath, and whose ultimate goal was to label true medicine as quackery and convince the masses that pharmaceuticals and petroleum-based products and surgery and chemotherapy and radiation were legitimate and mainstream medicine, and there be no sharing the stage. By the way, this is the same American Medical Association that was found guilty twice of criminal activity. I was one of the ones responsible for the second one when I wrote a series of articles, major national cover story articles, on documents that were leaked by a person. To this day, we do not know who it was, but packages began to show up at my apartment building with no return address and no handwritten notes, but they were all documents showing that there was a secret Department of Investigations run by a man named Taylor in the basement of the AMA headquarters that had about 70 employees, and their full-time job for more than 25 years was discrediting any form of natural and realistically helping therapy. It was these people's job to make sure that chiropractic was destroyed, naturopathic was destroyed, herbal medicine, osteopathic, any form of meditation, all this was to be destroyed. And they did it in unique ways. If you want to read the articles, it was a two-part series. I have it up on my website in our archives. In any case, after this, the articles exposed the corruption, there was a lawsuit, and the lawsuit went clear to the Supreme Court, and their guilt was upheld. They had conspired at the AMA, along with 11 other, the major medical organizations, were all found guilty, clear up to the Supreme Court, and they had to pay a fine and agree thereafter they would never again deem alternative therapies and chiropractic specifically as unscientific cults. But that's what it was deemed, an unscientific cult. In fact, it was so radicalized that there was one document from a physician who wrote to the state medical board saying that was it all right for him to stay a member of a country club because there was a chiropractor that also was a member of the country club and they might pass in the clubhouse, and would that constitute somehow associating with a quack, a cultist? Now, hard to imagine, but I actually have that document. So that's how intense the medical propaganda, the medical McCarthyism, I call it, that permeated the entire medical community for so long. And that's why, and by the way, just after that, when they were closed down officially, is exactly when the Quackbusters started. And I have a letter that no one knows that I have, but I have it, from one of the Quackbusters asking for the documents that they could no longer use because they were restricted by law from using it, so this person could carry on the attacks. And that's how the quacks got started. In any case, all the Quackbusters are all completely demolished today. Their reputations destroyed. They lose in every lawsuit. But let's just take a look at a few of the things that Fishbein called snake oil, and that indeed were really real. For example, the Chinese workers who immigrated to North America to labor on the railways, even though they were extremely exploited, they were laying tracks, and it was very physical. The Chinese had mixed together emulsifying ingredients with omega-3 derivatives, oleic acid, and this decreased inflammation of muscles and helped relax them. Well, guess what one of the oils was? Snake oil. They would actually press the oils out of snake, and then that was mixed, because in Chinese medicine, snake oil is an anti-inflammatory, hence the idea of snake oil. But they also used other things that worked as natural antibiotics and built the immune system, such as the oil of oregano. Oil from the common herb oregano is an effective treatment against dangerous drug-resistant bacteria. And there is a component within oregano oil called carvacrol, which reduces infection as effectively as traditional antibiotics with no side effects. You have what is called the holy or blessed thistle, which is Carbinia benedictia, and that has been recorded as early as the 16th century for treating smallpox and fever and anorexia, dyspepsia and indigestion. And blessed thistle tea has been drunk for digestive problems and liver and gallbladder problems and headaches, respiratory ailments, and it's terrific. And blessed thistle and its cousin milk thistle promotes healthy metabolic activities in liver cells. There are at least 100 articles in the peer-reviewed literature on milk thistle and blessed thistle. And then, of course, you add glutathione. The immune system is constantly on the prowl for pathogens and foreign antigens, and the agents of cellular damage and toxicity and disease. Well, these antigens include viruses and bacteria and parasites and fungi and precancerous cells. To neutralize these pathogens, the body needs a ready supply of glutathione. And glutathione was first discovered in 1888. And it was viewed under a microscope while studying the human eyeball. And there are currently over 85,000 peer-reviewed articles on the positive influence on cellular health of glutathione. Now, mistletoe also was considered a folk remedy for cancer. Well, hello. Mistletoe has been shown to have anti-tumor effects in both human and animal studies in Germany. And then homeopathic medicine was the primary medicine. There were over a dozen homeopathic schools. One of the most famous was in Philadelphia. And homeopathy developed much of its popularity in the United States and Europe because of its success in treating people with cholera, scarlet fever, yellow fever, and other infectious diseases that were ravaging populations. After 200 years, homeopathy is reemerging as a major healing approach to the degenerative diseases of this century. And the success of treating yellow fever with homeopathy was so impressive that a report from the U.S. government board of experts included several homeopathic medicines, despite the fact that the board was primarily composed of conventional physicians who despised homeopathy. So the success of homeopathic medicine in treating modern-day infections is comparable to its successes in treating infectious disease in the last century. In conclusion, a powerful conglomerate of government agencies, international drug companies, and major cancer treatment hospitals do not want the public to know the truth about alternative therapies because they may pursue them. And then as a result, they claim that there is no scientific validity to anything that actually prevents or heals in the alternative model. Yet we, every single day, cite study after study after study from peer-reviewed literature on what it means to use alternative therapy. Let me just give an example. This is from Johns Hopkins University. Quote, Johns Hopkins researchers have demonstrated that levels of certain proteins in the bloodstream may be used to estimate levels of essential vitamins and minerals without directly testing for each nutritional factor. And it showed that the average American can be tested to see whether or not they have deficiencies. Well, that's all in the alternative medical factory. So over 5 million articles now exist on alternative and complementary medicine that support its use. And that's good. Bee pollen. I remember having bee pollen mixed in with this god-awful tasting drink that my mom would give me. It had cholera oil, which I just, she said, hold your nose and drink it. It's good for you. And bee pollen is one of nature's most perfect foods. It is the tiny particles of male flower seeds that are carried from flower to flower on the legs and bodies of bees in the process of pollination. Now, the same pollen, which makes several hundred crops grow, also is beneficial to our health. The miracle of Mother Nature cannot be made in a laboratory either. Not one successful batch of artificial bee pollen has ever been made by scientists. But that would be nearly impossible considering that bee pollen is tiny particles from literally hundreds of different flower varieties. If bees are ever fed man-made pollen, they die. Pollen gathered from bees rather than from flowers themselves is the only true bee pollen. Now, pollen is made up of 40% protein with all the essential amino acids. Just one teaspoon of bee pollen contains about 2.5 billion grains, and a quarter of this is protein, which can be used immediately by the body as soon as it's digested. So small doses do make a difference. And bee pollen is more nutritionally dense than brewer's yeast or wheat germ, and it's been used in Chinese medicine for centuries and helps prevent infectious disease and rebuilds the blood and helps promote intestinal health and reduces sugar cravings and drug and alcohol addictions and even helps in the development of children. It's a natural antibiotic and contains a rich supply of over 59 trace minerals, and it is a true superfood that can boost health tremendously. In fact, scientific studies have shown that bee pollen has been used for a long time to treat asthma, depression, inflammation, digestive problems, cardio health, allergy relief, and increasing energy. And so that's one of the reasons that we should pay a little attention to something as simple as bee pollen. Now, finally, on the level of, we don't really pay attention to why we select a food as much as that we like a food. And if you look at raspberries on a shelf, they kind of pop out because they're beautiful color. Now, they don't last long. Generally, I suggest you eat them within 2 days or they'll start to go mushy and mold because they're not washed. And please remember that. No, none of the berries are washed before you get them. They've been hand-picked. So if you're eating something that's been hand-picked, that means that there are multiple hands that have touched it. They've been picked, sorted, boxed, and shipped, then generally unpacked, put into some containers, and ready for use. You may have had as many as 12 different hands touch that berry. So what I do is simple. I put the berries into a bowl. I spray them with a, even there, I only eat organic berries, and I spray them with a vegetable wash, and then I rinse it off, put them in a bowl, again, rinse the water and agitate them, where you take your hands and you kind of shake the berries around. And that dislodges some of the specks of dirt or bacteria that may be in some of the crevices, and then they're ready to eat. But better eat them all, because they'll go bad otherwise. And while blueberries and strawberries usually gain recognition for their health-enhancing properties, raspberries have also a lot that they can do for your body. One, very powerful anti-inflammatory. They help fight obesity, they enhance your cardiovascular support, they battle cancer, and they combat diabetes. Now, although the exact origins of raspberries is unknown, it's believed that they were cultivated in Europe more than 2,000 years ago and introduced to North America from Eastern Asia through trading. and it's one of the most popular berries in the world. You can find it in Russia, the United States, and Serbia, and Poland. You have red and black raspberries, and they're the most common varieties that you'll find in your local market. It's a powerhouse of antioxidants, and they stand out because they have a lot of a particular cancer-fighting enzyme property. And they are rich in anthocyanins, which gives them their rich red color. And they have 50% more antioxidants than strawberries, 1,000% more antioxidants than apples. So they're right at the top of antioxidants. But it's their anti-inflammatory. I have people who have arthritis, fibromyalgia, pancreatitis, any of the itises in inflammation. I always have people take between 1 to 3 full glasses of raspberry a day. Now, it's too expensive to juice the raspberries, so what I suggest people do is blend them. And you could do it kind of in a fun way. You can put a little bit of lemon in with it. You can put some mint leaves in with it, so you can change the flavor. But you blend it up, and that way you get it all down. And it has a capacity to suppress inflammation, especially for arthritis. And it is a COX-2 inhibitor. That's the enzyme, cyclooxygenase 2, that's an important enzyme in the formation of inflammatory compounds that induce pain, and then you end up with the side effects. Well, researchers at Michigan State University tested the cyclooxygenase inhibiting properties of anthocyanidins in popular fruits, including raspberries, strawberries, and blackberries, and cherries and cranberries. And the findings showed that raspberries were second only to cherries in their ability to inhibit COX-2. They reduced the enzyme by 45%, which means they're turning off pain naturally. And that's a good thing. But also, they fight cancer. Everyone I know who has cancer, I put them on a high berry diet. And I'm talking about a quart, 2 quarts a day, lots, in a blender, and get it into their system, because you need overcompensation. You must exceed the limitations of the disease process, the virus, bacteria, trauma, genetic damage. You have to exceed that if you're going to reverse it or improve it. And although cancers differ from one another in certain characteristics, most share the common key initiator of DNA damage. And researchers discovered that mice adhering to a raspberry-rich diet for 3 weeks significantly reduced DNA damage by 59%. And that was attributed to the high ELAGIC, E-L-L-A-G-I-C, acid content that increased DNA repair, which prevented the occurrence of mutations that lead to cancerous cells. And a recent study published in the journal The Cancer Prevention Research, the peer-reviewed journal, show that black raspberries are good for colon cancer. And that was in a study. And it also reduces cancer-promoting oxidative stress. And so that's good, too. And then we also have that it has cardioprotective effects. It will reduce your bad LDL cholesterol and by a substantial measure, and it's low in calories and creates satiety. So that's our nutrient of the day. I'm not going to have time today with all the rest we have in the show for fructose poisoning. I'll get to that tomorrow. But I want to read this commentary before we take our break and get our guest up. This is from The Guardian, from Rafiq Rehman. The last time I saw my mother was the evening before Adhade. She was preparing my children's clothing and showing them how to make a traditional sweet milk drink. She always used to say, "The joy of this holiday is the excitement it brings to the children." Last year, she never had that experience. The next day, 24th of October 2012, she was dead, killed by a U.S. drone that rained fire down upon her as she tended her garden. Nobody has ever told me why my mother was targeted that day. The media reported that the attack was on a car, but there was no road alongside my mother's house. Several reported the attack was on a house, but the missile hit a nearby field, not a house. All reported that 5 militants were killed. Only one person was killed, In fact, that was a 67-year-old grandmother of 9 children. My 3 children, 13, 9, and 5, were playing nearby when their grandmother was killed. All of them were seriously injured and rushed to hospitals. Were these children the militants the news report spoke of? Or perhaps it was my brother's children. They too were there. They were aged 3 years, 7, 12, 14, 15, and 17. The eldest 4 had just returned from a day at school, not long before the missile struck. But the United States and its citizens probably did not know this. No one ever asked us who was killed or injured that day. Not the United States, nor my own government. Nobody has come to investigate, nor has anyone been held accountable. Quite simply, nobody seems to care. Why? A 67-year-old grandmother posed a threat to one of the most powerful countries in the world. We want to understand how 9 children, some playing in the field, some just returned from school, could possibly have threatened the safety of those living a continent and ocean away. Most importantly, we want to understand why President Obama, when asked whom drones are killing, says they are killing terrorists. My mother was not a terrorist. My children are not terrorists. Nobody in our family is a terrorist. My mother was a midwife, the only midwife in our village. She delivered hundreds of babies in our community. Now families have no one to help them. And my father, he is a retired school principal. He spent his life educating children, something that my community needs far more than bombs. Bombs create only hatred in the hearts of people, and that hatred and anger breeds more terrorism. But education can help a country prosper. I, too, am a teacher. I was teaching in my local primary school on the day my mother was killed. I came home to find not the joys of the holiday, but my children in the hospital and a coffin containing only pieces of my mother. Our family has not been the same since the drone strike. Our home has turned into hell. The small children scream in the night and cannot sleep. They cry until dawn. Several of the children have had to have multiple surgeries. This has cost money we no longer have, since the missiles also killed our livestock. We have been forced to borrow from friends money we cannot repay. We then use the money to pay a doctor who removes from the children's bodies the metal gifts the U.S. gave them that day. Drone strikes are not like other battles, where innocent people are accidentally killed. Drone strikes target people before they kill them. The United States decides to kill someone, a person they only know from a video, a person who is not given a chance to say, "I'm not a terrorist." The U.S. chose to kill my mother. Several U.S. congressmen invited me to come to Washington, D.C. to share my story with members of Congress. I hope by telling my story, America may finally begin to understand the true impact of its drone program and who is on the other end of drone strikes. I want Americans to know about my mother, and I hope, maybe, I might get an answer to just one question. Why? When I saw what was, to me, one of the most reprehensible, corrupt interviews in the history of broadcasting on 60 Minutes, and this reporter should be ashamed of himself for having one of the top architects of our entire anti-terrorist program on from the CIA, and the defense community, he let it go that the drones are accurate. They're state-of-the-art. No, they're not. The man was lying. And the evidence is overwhelming. And here's what we should also know. And had the people at 60 Minutes actually chosen to do something that they rarely do, do your homework. At least try to be somewhat objective, even if you're faking it because of who pays your paycheck. Quote, U.S. diplomat, each drone attack creates 40 to 60 new enemies. Former U.S. deputy chief to the U.S. embassy in Yemen calculates blowback machine theory of U.S. counterterrorism is spot on. So, just remember, you kill someone's mother, and that mother has all this connected family in a village. Now you have a whole village who's against America, and yet we have not had anyone who've been held accountable or been honest about the extent to which we're murdering people in the world. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you all to this program. I'm Gary Knoll, our guest in a moment, but this is also a time to help our sister station, WBAI. I've been doing a morning program, which will only continue to the end of this drive, to try to bring not just financial support, I think that's secondary, but rather try to build an audience for the program that will take its place because there was no audience. When I say no audience, I mean no audience in the morning, yet that is the foundation upon which a station has to build for the rest of the day. So the good news is after just 2.5 weeks, we have built a tremendous audience in the morning. Listen to Progressive Commentary Hour, and my hope is that they get a really good program in there that can take this audience and carry it forward. And by the way, yesterday in the middle of the afternoon, even though we're tired of listening to these programs, I brought in $18,600 with one program. All right? So we're getting the bills paid at the station. One way we can also pay the bills and have something interesting for it is a documentary called Giuliani Time. And it's a documentary with a whole host of people going to be talking afterwards. There'll be the Green Party mayoral candidate, Tony Kamansk. There'll be Randy Credico, who's also Tax Wall Street Party mayoral candidate, Mitchell Cohen, environmental and social justice activist, Fran Luck, host of Joy of Resistance on WBAI, and surprise guest. All the proceeds to benefit listener-sponsored, non-commercial, free speech radio, WBAI, and there'll be a sliding scale at the door for any seats that remain unsold. But how can you get there? It's tonight. Call 516-620-3602. Or go to WBAI.org and click on the second slide for the event. It's a $25 donation. It's called Giuliani Time, 516-620-3602. I've already given the introduction to my guest, Hunter Lewis. How are you, Hunter?
Yeah, just fine. It's good to be with you.
Hunter, before you and I begin, I want you to listen to how one person, Dylan Radigan, summed up what's wrong with our current model of dealing with debt, Wall Street, the bankers. Rare do you hear someone, this was on MSNBC, by the way, he hasn't been back since, wonder why. Let's listen in.
$70 trillion.
Yeah, I understand that, but
goes due to walk out
say,
a $4 trillion solution, okay, which is basically just a way for the Democrats to avoid dealing with this until 2017. I'm not here to talk about plans to deal with this till 2017. I'm saying we've got a real problem, and I'm tired of Republicans and Democrats who either want Republicans who want to burn the place to the ground, and Democrats, with all due respect, who want to offer a plan that gets it through the their end of their second term of their presidency, and then screws me and my kids
okay,
when it's over. And until we do that, we have to deal with the extraction that is at foot. It is the reason the financial markets are behaving the way they're behaving. That is a mathematical fact. This is not some opinion. This is a mathematical fact. Tens of trillions of dollars are being extracted from the United States of America. Democrats aren't doing it. Republicans are not doing it. An entire integrated system, financial system, trading system, taxing system that was created by both parties over a period of two decades is at work on our entire entire country right now. And we're sitting here arguing about whether we should do the $4 trillion plan that kicks the can down the road for the president for 2017 or burn the place to the ground, both of which are reckless, irresponsible, and stupid. And the fact of the matter is, until we actually, and I'm sorry to lose my temper, but I'll tell you what, I've been coming on TV for 3 years doing this. And the fact of the matter is that there's a refusal on both the Democratic and the Republican side of the aisle to acknowledge the mathematical problem, which is that the United States of America is being extracted. It's being extracted through banking, it's being extracted through trade, and it's being extracted through taxation. And there's not a single politician that has stepped forward, Susan, to deal with this.
Yeah, but there's only one right now. The leader of the free world, whether you like it or not, the president of the United States is arguably one of the most powerful individuals we have out there.
But, Susan, what you're saying is exactly the point that Dylan is making. It's not about one guy. It's about all of them.
No, I actually disagree. I think Dylan's saying it
is
about one guy.
It is about one guy.
What would you like him to do? Tell me what you want him to do.
I would like him to go to the people of the United States of America and say, people of the United States of America, your Congress is bought. Your Congress is incapable of making legislation on health care, banking, trade, or taxes, because if they do it, they will lose their political funding and they won't do it. But I'm the President of the United States, and I won't have a country that is run by a bot Congress. So I'm not going to work with a bot Congress and try to be Mr. Big Guy. I'm working with the bot Congress. I'm going to abandon the bot Congress like Teddy Roosevelt did, and I'm going to go to the people of the United States and I'm going to say, you've got a bot Congress. And until we get rid of the bot Congress, which is Jimmy Williams' constant point, which is get the money out of politics, and until a president says that's the problem and says he's going to fix it, there is no policy that I can possibly see, no matter how brilliant your idea may be, or your idea, or my idea, or her idea, or your idea at home, is. That idea will not happen as long as there's the capacity to basically fire a politician who disagrees with me by taking funding away from him. Is that a fair assessment?
Money and politics is the root of all political evil. It is corruption at its worst. And until we step up and kick that out of the park, it's going to be the same system all
the time. And only the president could do that. We're going to
No, no, no. The Congress has to do it, too. The Congress has to do it, too.
But I'll tell you what.
The fly in the ointment is this president and his corporate Democratic colleagues and bragged about having $1.4 billion on their side to buy their presidential election. So if Dylan Ratigan is suggesting that the solution is to get a president who is a fully paid-for person of corporate interest, he is not going to make any such statements. Your thoughts on this as we start here, Hunter, we've got a big problem. I think people are confused between a true free market capitalism and crony capitalism, which dominates economics today. And I'd like for you to talk about crony capitalism in its various economic sectors, and like Goldman Sachs in finance and food and agriculture, medicine, labor, unions, and even our legal profession. The forum is yours.
Well, and I certainly think that we can sort of take from that tape that you just played that, you know, that the average Democrat voter or the average Republican voter actually can agree on a lot right now. What they can agree on is that the middle class and the poor in this country are really being taken advantage of. They are getting the short end of the stick. Paul Krugman said that we had a rich man's recovery since the last, since the crash. And that's absolutely right. But the question is, why do we have a rich man's recovery? Why are the middle class doing so badly? The median income of the average American is now back to 1989 levels. That's how badly they're doing. The average American has lost more ground since the end of the recession than during the recession. So it just keeps getting worse and worse. And of course, the unemployment rate is deceiving because more and more people have dropped out of the labor force looking for work, so the rate goes down, but it doesn't mean that real unemployment has gone down at all. What's behind this, of course, are bad economic policies on one side of the coin and crony capitalism on the other side of the coin. They're really sort of connected or the same thing.
I believe that the Federal Reserve, which is the most powerful financial institution in the world, is also fully responsible for this, because it allowed the banks and Wall Street firms to amass massive amounts of capital that they could use and debt leverage buyouts. They also created the derivatives market. They stood by while the Glass-Steagall Act was eviscerated. And yet these are the people that the Fed chose to bail out, not small businesses, not to help homeowners whose homes were being foreclosed on, and not to help the poor, those who are suffering because their meager amounts of income have been eviscerated. Your thoughts on the Federal Reserve, which I believe should be eliminated completely, closed down, and then let the Treasury print money at no interest?
Well, and I agree that the Federal Reserve should be shut down. And right now, we have this sort of crony capitalist alliance between Wall Street and the Federal Reserve. But we have to understand that when the Federal Reserve bails out Wall Street, it's also bailing out government. I mean, one of the most striking features of the crash and the bailout was that, of course, all that money was put on a conveyor belt to Wall Street, but so much of it was then used to buy the federal government's bonds. I think one of the greatest problems in the chairman of the Federal Reserve's eyes in the crash was that he was afraid that people would stop buying the government bonds. And by shipping all that money to Wall Street, he got Wall Street to buy them for him. And then, of course, you see, it's against the law for the government to sell bonds to itself, for the Treasury to issue the bonds and then the Federal Reserve to buy them, the Federal Reserve being an agency of the government. But it's not against the law to send the money to Wall Street and then to have Wall Street buy the bonds. So it's really a bailout of Washington at the same time that it's a bailout of Wall Street. They're all in it together. And, of course, that's the nature of crony capitalism. It's a merger of big government, big business, big finance, big labor, and big government, all working together to create deals for themselves that benefit themselves and that don't benefit the public, the middle class, and the poor.
That's also classical fascism.
Well, that's what it absolutely. It has sort of echoes of what Mussolini did and what Hitler did. Of course, that's very emotional because when we talk about fascism, we think of all the murders and the political oppression and so on. We don't focus on the economic policies that were pursued by those fascist governments. But what we're doing now is along the same lines. It could be called fascism light.
One of the big issues right now is Obamacare. This audience knows why I'm opposed to Obamacare. I've written on it. And it has nothing to do with Democrat or Republican ideologies. It has to do, as I've gone, and I won't repeat it now, but that it doesn't address health care. And it also was created by the insurance industries to give it what would be hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars in additional profits. And yet Americans won't be healthier because of it. So could you give us your take on Obamacare, especially in light of 23% of home mortgages are currently underwater, and the primary reason is family medical expenses? Would you speak on Obamacare, on the dismal medical system of prevention and care, and how is Obamacare an example of crony capitalism?
Well, first of all, of course, and the most essential problem with Obamacare is that if the government defines what health insurance is, which it does through Obamacare, then it defines what health is and what health care is. And, of course, government is not the right party to be defining what health care is, because if government is in charge of defining what health care is, then it just creates an opportunity for insurance companies and hospitals and medical equipment manufacturers and all the other special interest players to come in and behind the scenes decide that their products will be favored by the government instead of anything else. So any hope to innovate in the medical system, to have a change, to have it grow, to have it improve, you completely lose that if government defines what health care is. And then, of course, in the economic side, as you said, it's a perfect example of crony capitalism. It was created by inviting all the special interests to come to the White House to a meeting where they all got together. The only group that didn't go along was the medical equipment manufacturers, so they were stuck with a big new tax in the bill just as a punishment, but everybody else went along. And look at what it does to just the average worker. A minimum wage worker if you add Obamacare to the minimum wage, it costs at least $2.28 per worker, and for a family, $5.89. So that's added on to the minimum wage. It's no surprise that as soon as that bill passed, companies started getting rid of minimum wage workers and replacing them with, like automatic teller machines and stores and things like that as quickly as they could. And it's still just absolutely making it harder and harder for young people and poor people to get a job.
Well, also, I wrote a major article. It was with five other scholars, MDs and PhDs. It took 5 years to do, and it was titled Death by Medicine. And in it, we showed that the number one cause of death in America, far exceeding heart disease, stroke, and cancer, was American medicine. The number one cause of injury by at least 10 million a year was American medicine. So if you're starting off with a platform that says that we have the best medical care in the world and we want to make sure everyone gets it, then you're also going to have more people die or be injured because the system itself is grossly flawed and there is no effort at all to change the model. We have no prevention at all. We have children over-medicated, 10 million. We have seniors over-medicated, 17 drugs that an average person over 70 has taken. We have men and women in hospice care and in nursing homes dying from dehydration and malnutrition. We are over-tested. We are over-medicated. Many of the procedures have no medical basis in safety and efficacy. And so that's the care that we're told about instead of how do we prevent disease and what is the most prudent, realistic way of helping a person who is sick. If we did that, and if we took the profit out of health care, our medical bill would be about $500 billion instead of $3.2 trillion. And we'd be saving lives instead of costing lives. And yet a lot of people just refuse because of their ideological reference points to come to grips with this. Your thoughts, please.
Well, Death by Medicine is one of the most important books of the last 10 years. And I wish more and more people would read that book and have their eyes opened about how imperative it is to really reform the medical care system. But how can you reform it when it is controlled by this crony capitalist alliance of big government and big everybody else? I mean, you can't really get started until you deal with the crony capitalism.
You're right. My last thought on this is that I believe that crony capitalism is the number one cause of increasing poverty in America today. Your thoughts on this?
Absolutely. It's impoverishing the economy. And again, that's hardest on the middle class and especially on the poor. It takes the form of, as I said in the beginning, bad economic policies, like the idea that too much debt causes a crash and will then just load on more debt, or that taking on more debt will help to reduce the debt. And of course, that just leads to bubble and bust. And bubble and bust is an environment which helps certain rich people who can get hold of government money or who are benefited by government policies, but it absolutely ruins the economic future of everybody else.
What's your solution?
When you get left and right together, you get these kind of arguments that the left says we need more government control and regulation, and the right says you need less government control and regulation, and of course, I think you need less. But, both sides should be able to agree that we need better government regulation. We need a more sensible approach. And the key to that would be to get government to stop interfering with prices. Medical care is such a good example of that. There are no real market prices in medicine. They've absolutely been destroyed by the government, starting with the Medicare program and going from there. So there are no prices left. And, of course, that's why the medical care system is so uneconomic, why the prices keep rising, why the quality keeps falling. So if you just follow one principle, that whenever government regulates the economy, it should not interfere with, manipulate, or in any way control prices, then that would be the way to go.
Well, of course, behind all those political moves are the crony capitalists, like the Koch brothers or others, who by the legislators or through ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council at the state level, and that's why so many things are so expensive today. And also there's just a lack of humanistic values at all levels of our society.
But see, those crony capitalists, when they go to Washington and they try to buy results for themselves, what they're usually buying is some intervention in the price system of the economy. So that if you could just bar any controls, manipulations of prices, you could stop all the buying and selling of politicians.
I appreciate your insights, Hunter Lewis. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Hunter Lewis, the author of Crony Capitalism in America, as well as Free Prices Now, Fixing the Economy by Abolishing the Federal Reserve, and website is againstcronycapitalism.com. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Now let's say hello to Lou Ann Panessi, who's just walked into the studio. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. Boy, that was pretty insightful. Well, just a quick note, your book, The Joy of Juicing, whether you realize it or not, is climbing up the charts on the New York Times bestseller list. And I remember The Joy of Juicing early in the 1990s. That was my Bible when I first began to learn about healthy eating and the whole concept of juicing. So it's nice to see that it's making a fast comeback here on the New York Times bestseller list.
Good. I don't believe it's the New York Times bestseller list.
Oh,
it's the Amazon bestseller list. But
Amazon's even better.
Yeah, there's two of them. This morning I had two bestsellers.
There you go.
Reboot Your Brain.
Yeah.
And The Joy of Juicing. The Joy of Juicing's been up there for about 9 months. But the reboot is up there now, and we're pleased about that because it means people are going to be benefiting. That's what's important.
Absolutely. And also, I've had a lot of people emailing me about this whole resurgence of the drama of Hurricane Sandy. And the news, just all over the news, they're talking about rebuild, rebuild, rebuild on every coastline from Brooklyn to New Jersey. Freeport on Long Island, they're doing it all over again. No different than these people that live in the hurricane belt or the tornado belt in the Midwest. It boggles the brain.
On one hand, I can certainly understand the human condition wanting to rebuild because you've lost everything. You're looking at your life now as been wiped away, or what was an important part of your life. And that's where we live, our home. We identify ourselves with that because think how many decades we stay in a place, and the older people in particular. But then you have to balance that against being realistic. What is the reality of another hurricane coming through in the near future but being worse than Sandy? Now, because I study weather patterns, and I'm an environmentalist, and my new documentary is on the 12 tipping points, I can say with absolute certainty that everyone building their home back now, the boardwalks, all that's going to be completely destroyed, plus 100 times more, because this was only a Category 1, and we're going to get one of the superstorms. We'll get a Category 3, 4, 5 up the East Coast. It's inevitable. And ask any climatologist, and they'll tell you this. We're going to get worse drought. That was just in today's paper. We're getting more tornadoes, and worse. We had more than 16,000 excessive weather events in the last 3 months alone. And now they're becoming almost the new norm. And we should pay attention to this. So we have to temper our desire to go out there and prove that we are strong in character. No one questions your strength of character. No one questions your showing that, you know, you're going to recover. But do it smartly. Move to another location that is sustainable. So the next section of your life, you'll be not in harm's way. And right now we have 65 million Americans living close enough to a disaster area that they're going to be victimized. It's just when. And that's unfortunate. When I was up in Flagstaff last summer, and there's some photographs of me up there, a camper came by and said, "Oh, aren't you the guy I see on, you know, television?" I said, "Yeah." "Oh, I take a picture." I said, "Well, take a couple pictures for me," and I put them up there. You can see that's my meditation. I'm alone, no tent, no, just water for a week. But what you don't see is all around me, the forest is burning. Smoke is everywhere. And that's the highest point in Arizona. And I'm thinking, how often? So I stopped off at some places on the way back, and I said, has this been regular? No, this is something we're seeing now, because people from Phoenix used to go to Flagstaff in the summertime to cool off. It was not now. It's too dangerous. And they're also running out of water. Coming back also, you have to pass through Sedona. Sedona's running out of water. The mayor told me that. He took me around for a little tour. And because his father used to be the famous cowboy that put Sedona on the map, because it was his ranch that John Wayne and John Ford shot all those old famous westerns. And so you get to see all these wonderful red mountain formations, and that's what makes Sedona unique. It's out of nowhere. You suddenly come up over this bluff, and there's all these red mountains in front of you. Really a spectacularly beautiful place, running out of water, fires. So there's a new norm, and the new norm is, no matter what you've done in the past, is it sustainable? And the answer is almost no. So that's the message.
Well, the issue here is that people actually believe, these are people, I mean, I live on Long Island right now, and these people actually believe that that was just a freak event and it just won't happen again in their lifetime.
Well, that's like thinking your heart attack was a freak event and it won't happen again. Thank you, Luann. Let's say hello to, standing by, from a secret location, deep within the Amazon, surrounded by a militia, Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Hello, Gary. Hello, Luann. How are you? Well, today being Tuesday, we have our regular round of open forum, where listeners take the conversation wherever they want it to go.
Great. Okay, Utrece Lead, right now. She is studying to become the new radio proctologist.